When Kevin arrived back at the Emporium Galorium with the photographs on Monday after school, the leaves had begun to turn color. He had been 15 for almost 2 weeks, and the novelty had worn off. The novelty of that plinth, the supernatural, had not. But this wasn't anything he counted among his blessings. He had finished taking the schedule of photographs Pop had given him, and by the time he had seen clearly, clearly enough anyway, why Pop had wanted him to take them at intervals. The first 10 on the hour. Then let the camera rest. The second 10 every 2 hours. And the third at 3 hour intervals. He'd taken the last few that day at school. He had seen something else as well. Something none of them could have seen at first. It was not clearly visible until the final 3 pictures. They had scared him so badly he had decided, even before taking the pictures to the Emporium Galorium, that he wanted to get rid of the Sun 660. Not exchange it. That was the last thing he wanted to do, because it would mean the camera would be out of his hands, and hence out of his control. He couldn't have that. It's mine, he had thought, and the thought kept recurring. But it wasn't a true thought. If it was, if the Sun only took pictures of the black, breedless dog by the white picket fence, when he, Kevin, was the one pushing the trigger, that would have been one thing. But that wasn't the case. Whatever the nasty magic inside the Sun might be, he was not its sole initiator. His father had taken the same, well, almost the same picture, and so had Pop Merrill, and so had Meg, when Kevin had let her take a couple of the pictures on Pop's carefully timed schedule.
"Did you number 'em like I asked?"
Pop asked when Kevin delivered them. "Yes, 1 to 58, Kevin said. He thumbed through the stack of photographs, showing Pop the small circled numbers in the lower left-hand corner of each. "But I don't know if it matters. I've decided to get rid of the camera."
"Get rid of it? That ain't what you mean."
"No, I guess not. I'm going to break it up with a sledgehammer." Pop looked at him with those shrewd little eyes.
"That so?"
"Yes," Kevin said, meeting the shrewd gaze steadfastly. "Last week I would have laughed at the idea, but I'm not laughing now. I think the thing is dangerous."
"Well, I guess you could be right. And I guess you could tape a charge of dynamite to it and blow it to smithereens if you wanted. It's yours, is what I mean to say. Why don't you hold off a little while? There's something I want to do with these pictures. You might be interested."
"What?"
"I'd rather not say," Pop answered, "in case it don't turn out. But I might have something by the end of the week that'd help you decide better one way or the other."
"I have decided," Kevin said, and tapped something that had shown up in the last 2 photographs.
"What is it?" Pop asked. "I've looked at it with my glass, and I feel I should know what it is. It's like a name you can't quite remember, but have right on the tip of your tongue, is what I mean to say, but I don't quite."
"I suppose I could hold off until Friday or so," Kevin said, choosing not to answer the old man's question. "I really don't want to hold off much longer."
"Scared?"
"Yes," Kevin said simply. "I'm scared."
"You told your folks?"
"Not all of it, no."
"Well, you might want to. Might want to tell your dad anyway, is what I mean to say. You got time to think on it while I take care of what it is I want to take care of."
"No matter what you want to do, I'm going to put my dad's sledgehammer on it come Friday," Kevin said. "I don't even want a camera anymore, not a Polaroid or any other kind."
"Where is it now?"
"In my bureau drawer, and that's where it's going to stay."
"Stop by the store here on Friday," Pop said. "Bring the camera with you. We'll take a look at this little idea of mine, and then, if you want to bust that goddamn thing up, I'll provide the sledgehammer myself, no charge. Even got a chopping block out back you can set it on."
"That's a deal," Kevin said, and smiled.
"Just what have you told your folks about all this?"
"That I'm still deciding. I didn't want to worry them, my mom especially." Kevin looked at him curiously. "Why did you say I might want to tell my dad?"
"You bust up that camera, your father is going to be mad at you," Pop said. "That ain't so bad. But he's maybe going to think you're a little bit of a fool, too. Or an old maid, squalling burglar at the police on account of a creaky board, is what I mean to say.
Kevin flushed a little, thinking of how angry his father had gotten when the idea of the supernatural had come up, then sighed. He hadn't thought of it in that light at all, but now that he did, he thought Pop was probably right. He didn't like the idea of his father being mad at him, but he could live with it. The idea that his father might think him a coward, a fool, or both, though, that was a different kettle of fish altogether. Pop was watching him shrewdly, reading these thoughts as they crossed Kevin's face as easily as a man might read the headlines on the front page of a tabloid newspaper.
You think he could meet you here around 4 p.m. on Friday?
No way, Kevin said. He works in Portland. He hardly ever gets home before 6.
I'll give him a call if you want, Pop said. He'll come if I call.
Kevin gave him a wide-eyed stare. Pop smiled thinly.
Oh, I know him, he said. Know him of old. He don't like to let on about me any more than you do, and I understand that. But what I mean to say is I know him. I know a lot of people in this town. You'd be surprised, son.
How?
Did him a favor one time, Pop said.
He popped a match alight with his thumbnail and veiled those eyes behind enough smoke so you couldn't tell if it was amusement, sentiment, or contempt in them.
What kind of favor?
That, Pop said, is between him and me. Just like this business here,
he gestured at the pile of photographs,
is between me and you. That's what I mean to say.
Well, okay, I guess. Should I say anything to him?
Nope,
Pop said in his chipper way.
You let me take care of everything.
And for a moment, in spite of the obfuscating pipe smoke, there was something in Pop Merrill's eyes that Kevin Delavan didn't care for. He went out, a sorely confused boy, who knew only one thing for sure. He wanted this to be over. When he was gone, Pop sat silent and moveless for nearly 5 minutes. He allowed his pipe to go out in his mouth and drummed his fingers, which were nearly as knowing and talented as those of a concert violinist, but masqueraded as equipment which should more properly have belonged to a digger of ditches or a pourer of cement, next to the stack of photographs. As the smoke dissipated, his eyes stood out clearly, and they were as cold as ice in a December puddle. Abruptly, he put the pipe in its holder and called a camera and video shop in Lewiston. He asked 2 questions. The answer to both of them was yes. Pop hung up the phone and went back to drumming his fingers on the table beside the Polaroids. What he was planning wasn't really fair to the boy, but the boy had uncovered the corner of something he not only didn't understand, but didn't want to understand. Fair or not, Pop didn't believe he intended to let the boy do what the boy wanted to do. He hadn't decided what he himself meant to do, not yet, not entirely, but it was wise to be prepared. That was always wise. He sat and drummed his fingers and wondered what that thing was the boy had seen. He had obviously felt Pop would know, or might know, but Pop hadn't a clue. The boy might tell him on Friday, or not. But if the boy didn't, the father, to whom Pop had once loaned $400 to cover a bet on a basketball game, a bet he had lost, which his wife knew nothing about, certainly would. If, that was, he could. Even the best of fathers didn't know all about their sons anymore, once those sons were 15 or so. But Pop thought Kevin was a very young 15, and that his dad knew most things, or could find them out. He smiled, drummed his fingers, and all the clocks began to charge wearily at the hour of 5.